This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Purcell. This morning, Thane Maynard is talking with David Quammen about his new book, Spillover, Animal Infections and the Next Human Pandemic.
Hi, David. It's Thane.
Thane, my friend. Howdy.
Listen, I'll tell you, this book of yours, just when I thought that climate change and poaching of elephants was enough to keep me up at night, now there's a global pandemic coming.
Well, this book is supposed to explain it so that you can sleep at night.
I'll tell you what, though, you know, honestly, if you boil down the book, one of the messages is, I'm glad we've made it this far, and as you say at the end, it all depends.
Yeah, yeah. That's what, in my work, that's what passes for a note of hope.
Exactly. Well, but honest to goodness, in addition to telling about some of the science of it and the research, you know, it's a great travel adventure because you didn't just talk about it or read about it. I mean, you went to the Congo. Tell a bit about some of these, particularly maybe start with Ebola and adventures and misadventures of going to look at that.
Well, yeah, the whole project began for me about 12 years ago, sitting at a campfire in Central Africa with Mike Fay during his mega transect expedition across Central Africa, and with his crew of local guys. And there were two fellows from a nearby village that had suffered an outbreak of Ebola. This was in northeastern Cameroon in a forest block called the Minkebi block that we were walking across. And just east of the Minkebi block was this village that had been hard hit just a few years earlier by an outbreak of Ebola. People were dying. These guys were seeing their friends and loved ones dying. One of the fellows lost six family members and had a niece die in his arms. And it had been terrible. It had been harrowing and tragic and everything else. And then the one fellow said, you know, and it's a peculiar thing, weird thing, that at the time this was happening to our village, we saw a pile of 13 dead gorillas nearby in the forest. And that stuck in my mind. He wasn't saying the gorillas had died of Ebola. He didn't even know at the time that it was a virus that was causing people to die in the village. But I knew by that point that Ebola virus not only kills humans, it also kills apes, kills gorillas, kills chimpanzees. So hearing about the 13 dead gorillas nearby in the forest started me on the journey of thinking about and learning about these zoonotic diseases and how they represent, among other things, the connectedness between humans and other species by way of infectious diseases, among other ways.
And, of course, zoonotic diseases are not anything new. They've played a huge role in human history.
Yeah, right. Bubonic plague was a zoonotic disease. All of the influenzas are zoonotic diseases. Yellow fever is a zoonotic disease. But so they've been around for a long time, but the trend seems to be getting worse. There seem to be more of these things emerging from wildlife and getting into humans and causing pandemics more than ever before for a number of reasons that I explain in the book.
And, you know, it's an interesting thing. You and I have talked before. I was always fascinated with Jared Diamond's book, Guns, Germs, and Steel, and a thing in your book that I kept thinking was, wow, it's coming back the other way around. So rather than people bringing that disease, intentionally or not, as they colonize the world, nonetheless, those pandemics are coming at us.
Yeah, and some of these are emerging from the places where biological diversity is the greatest. They're emerging from our tropical forests because there are so many species there, so many species of plants, animals, fungi, and other creatures. And according to what some scientists say, you can figure there's at least one unique virus, one unique kind of virus for each of those other species. So as we go in there, you know, rattling everything apart, killing and eating the wildlife, cutting down the trees, we're exposing ourselves to a huge number of viruses, and we're disturbing them from their accustomed hosts, their accustomed relationships, their accustomed competitors, so that when they get into us, there's a chance that they can go wild in a different sense.
Exactly.
Coming from the wild.
Now, some of these diseases and viruses, you know, seem somewhat distant, like Ebola. You know, you might not think, gosh, is someone in Cincinnati going to be exposed to that? Or if it was in that area, you know, maybe they don't get exposed to the blood or even AIDS with body fluids. But there are others and others that you describe where, I mean, and there's scientists researching them, be they in Asia or wherever, which are much more communicable than, say, ones where you need to have contact. Tell a bit about that work.
Well, some of these things can really travel. Ebola is not likely to get to Cincinnati or to Bozeman, Montana, but some of these things ride airplanes really well because they are respiratory infections, mm-hmm. because they travel through the air. SARS, for instance, came out of southern China in 2003, got to Hong Kong in the body of one sick man. He checked into a hotel, infected a number of other people on the ninth floor where his room was, and then those people, just starting to feel ill, starting to cough, starting to feel feverish, they got on airplanes and left Hong Kong for Toronto, for Beijing, for Hanoi, for Singapore. So this thing had gone halfway around the world in just a matter of days, and then it came back from Toronto to the Philippines soon afterwards in the body of some other infected person. So it had gone all the way around the world in just a few days. That's one of the lessons that comes out of this subject. This is not a problem for faraway people in developing countries. This has got implications for all of us.
How about in some of the places where you've gone to see whether those are the researchers, such as SARS, or out in the forest, such as the Congo, are there, whether those are programs or nations, where people are saying, look, we need to take this seriously and we need to control, say, for instance, too much access into the forest that's creating these problems?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Some governments are taking action. For instance, in southern China, there were just a few years ago, there were a lot of wet markets selling wildlife for food. They call them wet markets because, you know, because the blood is still wet. These animals are still alive, stacked up in wire cages, different species piled one on top of the other. You have bats and palm civets and bamboo rats and porcupines and all kinds of other things just jumbled together in these markets selling them for food. And in the meantime, while they're there, they're exchanging viruses. So that's what led to the SARS outbreak. It was a virus that has its reservoir in bats, and it passed from bats into palm civets, and people were eating palm civets, and that's how people got infected. But then the government of China declared that the palm civets should be culled. They killed off a lot of palm civets, which was unfair to the palm civets because they weren't the reservoir. And they drove the wet markets, if not out of existence, they drove them underground.
I know, and that's a good attempt to try to help, but probably won't actually stem the tide, particularly if the real host were the bats. But
yes, from what I hear, there's still a lot of wildlife being delivered to, quote, connoisseurs in China through the black market trade.
Yeah, you know, for our sensibilities, that seems hard to understand. But if it's based on long tradition, it's very hard to stop.
That's true. Some of it is a new tradition, though. It's a new vogue. They call it wild flavor in southern China. I can't tell you the Chinese words, but there's a phrase that designates this, and it's not a matter of people seeking protein for subsistence, the way you find in the villages of Central Africa. It's a vogue among the affluent, and you know, it's like the vogue for ivory. It's something that has devastating consequences, and it's not easy to do something about it, but it's worth a try.
Absolutely, and they're seeing the same thing in southern Asia with rhino horn. Not the old traditions, but just a way of guys to show off that here's how successful I am. I can waste these resources.
That's right. Yeah,
so
exactly.
Give us the takeaway from your book, Spillover.
The takeaway, I guess, is that, I mean, I know this. My main purpose in the book is not to make people scared. As I say in the book, the purpose is not to make you more worried. It's to make you more smart. It's a very serious problem. It's a widespread problem. It's everybody's problem. There are things that we can do about it as individuals. You know, get a flu vaccine, pick the ticks off of your kid when he comes in from playing in the forest in Lyme, Connecticut, and put on some mosquito repellent if you're in North Dallas in the evening so you don't get West Nile fever. Individual things, but as citizens, we can support research that's going on. We can support the budget of the CDC. But at the bottom of all that, I argue, lies the need for people just to understand it. Just don't try to apply your knowledge before you have some. Take time and a little bit of effort, and I hope it's entertaining in my book as well as elucidating, and learn about this. Learn the ecological and evolutionary dynamics of these emerging diseases, because it's very important, A, B, it affects your health, and C, I think it's just bloody fascinating. It's a scientific detective story.
It's always good to talk to you. Thanks for taking a few minutes, and good luck with the book.
Thank you much, Thane.
My guest has been David Quammen, author of the new book, Spillover. For Cincinnati Edition, I'm Thane Maynard.